Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. We want to thank you very much for joining us. We'll ask for your phone calls and your questions and comments after the top of the hour news. If you want to jot the phone number down now, that's 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on there and let you air your question or comment live to our guest today. Our guest today, and we're looking for reinforcements. Rick Riker has joined us from the Grants Pass City Council. Rick, thank you very much for joining us. Brian De La Grange was also scheduled to be here, but a last-minute situation developed, and he can't make it. So we've reached out for some reinforcements. But Rick, once again, welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chuck. How are you?
Not too bad. Well, you've got broad shoulders, and you're one of, actually, you're probably one of the longest-serving counselors, are you not? How long have you been on the council?
14 years.
14 years. Yeah, I don't think anybody's been there longer. Are you senior right now?
I'm senior right now, correct.
Oh, okay. All right. How does that feel with a lot of new people coming in? Are you ready to give some guidance?
I'm looking forward to the opportunity.
Okay. All right.
I like conversation. I've been able to meet with Nick and Kathleen and had good time talking over coffee, and looking forward to getting together with Indra and Victoria at a later date. I know Clint, so from before.
Yeah, Clint served with you before.
Yes,
and
yes.
He'll be up in the mayor's seat.
That's true.
Okay. But in the meantime, until the first of the year, though, it's business as usual, but there's not a lot of business yet left this year, is there? I think we just have one more meeting. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's correct. Yesterday we decided we only need one more meeting, which will be Wednesday night at 6 o'clock, although we do meet at 5:30 for an executive session.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of those things. First of all, you had a significant business session or workshop yesterday.
Correct.
And talked about the water treatment plant. We have a hard number now for that water treatment plant, a little over 130. It's almost hard to say. A little over $113 million is the hard cost right now. That's etched in stone, is it not?
Well, it's on the contract, but the thing is they always can have an adjustment with a work order.
Okay, so things can change if you meet things during the construction situation.
Correct.
Okay. That being said, we're also still anticipating a grant for about $50 million to go towards that 113, and we haven't received that yet. What is the outlook for those incoming monies?
It looks positive. They've told us we're in the process. They haven't booted us out or delayed us. So we are keeping our fingers crossed that they will come through. They've asked for additional information, which we've provided, and we'll go from there.
When do we expect a yes or no? Do we have a date? I know because we've been talking about this extra $50 million for over a year now, haven't we?
Yes, yes. I would like to say in the next month we could see it, but we don't know for sure. I mean, government has a tradition of always not providing answers in a prompt manner. So,
yeah, walking along at the government gate is what I yeah.
Yes.
The wheels turn slowly sometimes, and as much as we like to turn a little faster, you just can't speed those up, can you?
No. But it was interesting because yesterday the question was asked, if we don't get the $50 million, what happens to the water rates?
Yeah, that's my next question.
And Jason said it's anticipated at this point it would go up about 5%.
So 5% increase, okay.
5% increase if we don't get the $50 million.
All right. Now, that's just on the water rates. There's not going to be an additional charge levied on my city utility bill?
Well,
that's a tough one to answer.
That's a hard one to pin down. They're just looking at the water rates. And the one of the things on the water rate that needs to be there, if we go out for a bond, the bond needs to know that we have the income coming in to provide, I would say, the income for the investor, because the investors that will invest in that want to know that we have the rates that will support
have the ability
it.
To pay it back.
Yes,
huh?
Pay it back.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So that being said, a 5% increase, is that for the $113 million, or is that taking into consideration the $50 million?
It's my understanding the $50 million, because we already have the rates in effect for the first part.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, the first part coming up, construction slated to begin late April, May, this coming spring?
Correct.
Okay. That brings up another question that I think that probably the council is going to deal with very soon, and that's the J Street property, where that will go, which is now filled with campers. What is the latest situation here? What are we looking at?
Well, we're looking at considering Mint, and if they can be up and running with different facilities, they're looking at putting those little, pod homes out there. The pallet homes.
The pallet homes
for the people.
Now, they don't have room for a lot of pallet homes out there. I think 17 was the last number that I heard.
Yeah. We at the city are already storing those. We don't own the pallet homes. But Mint is looking at getting a hold of those and putting them on site at the Redwood site.
Right. And they've been looking at getting that done since they took over that old Parker House situation.
Correct.
Which they just leased, as I understand it. That lease is coming due, right?
So this is
really a convoluted situation we're looking at right now.
Yeah, it's having to deal with that. They have a deadline of January of 2025 on the current lease, and they would like to acquire the property, and they've approached the city to see if we can provide funding for that, and that's part of our discussion right now.
All right, what are we talking about? The number I've heard, 250,000, is that correct?
250,000?
Yeah. That sounds small to me.
That's small.
What are they asking the city for? Is that what they're asking the city for?
Well, there's different numbers floating around, so I'm really hesitant on trying to really pin it down. One of the numbers that was floating around at one point was 750,000 in past discussions. But they've
that
also
may have been what I was thinking.
Okay.
I tend to shrink things down for some reason when we're talking about big dollar amounts.
But Mint has provided an appraisal of the property, and that's 400. I believe it's 460,000. So, again, all of this is in discussion with the city council and Mint and so forth. City council has to make a decision whether we will fund it or not fund it.
Well, you got to make a decision pretty quickly, and that looks to be like tomorrow night. And we're kind of anticipating an adjusted agenda coming out soon.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
That's accurate.
Okay. Now, during the discussion yesterday, do you have a feel of which way the current council is contemplating on moving? We're not nailing you down here.
It's interesting to see the dynamics that are going on and so forth. I would say it's 50-50 right now, but there's a lot of different factors in there playing in the field that will give a comfort level to the counselor to whether they go one way or the other. And part of, I think, if I were to say what are the factors are the money. Also, Mint is to come forward with a program showing what they want to achieve in a timeline so they actually have a plan,
mm-hmm.
a plan to go forward.
Now, so, from what I hear about Mint, their goals are certainly admirable, but I'm not sure that Parker Place is the right place to put everything. I'm not sure they have the space there to accommodate what needs to be accommodated. Is that fair?
Well, that can be part of the discussion. We've also had the opportunity for the old Spark building up there on Washington Boulevard. That's vacant, but a lot of people in the neighborhood, the residential neighborhood and the commercial businesses don't want it there.
Which building is that upon Washington?
Spark. It's a large...
That's just off Morgan there, isn't it?
Morgan, yes.
Just off Morgan, mm-hmm. Morgan and Washington?
Correct.
Right, that is a residential area surrounding, well, at least certainly on two sides of it.
Correct, and businesses as well. And so there's no perfect spot, and there's always going to be somebody saying, I don't want my backyard.
NIMBY. not my backyard.
Yes.
I certainly understand that. So do you have a feel which way? And I know looking ahead, you guys, the council, got to make a decision by tomorrow night because this is coming up within 30 days or within 60 days that they need to have that property secured?
That's correct.
Okay, certainly within 60 days. I don't have a date in January that they need to have this done by. Do you?
I think it's the end of January.
End of January. So about 60 days then.
Yes.
But we've got a new council coming in between now and then. But they won't have an opportunity to voice their opinion on that. Or are we in council with those new candidates coming in?
The new candidates have been sending us email voicing their opinions and so forth. And we've been reading their emails. But one of the situations that everybody observes when I first came on council is by being fed with a fire hose of information and trying to sort it all out. And it was a real challenge. And it took me – people said, why don't you talk on the TV? Why aren't you, you know, asking questions and doing this? Well, I just wasn't comfortable. And so it took me, I would say, 2 years to really feel that I could really start expressing myself and feel confident that way.
So there's a significant learning curve.
Yes, there's a significant learning curve. And I've had the opportunity to go out to coffee with Nick and Kathleen, the new counselors, and talk to them. I said, whenever you make a decision, I think the most important thing is to make sure you have adequate information, that you have the facts to make that decision with. Because I personally don't want to make a decision and find out there was some fact out there I wish I had, and I could have gone the other way. And I've told people, I said, if I have new information that comes in and it's significant, within 30 seconds I can change my mind. So even though I may have one position today, you give me some new information, I can change my mind because of that.
All right. How much information is available to the counselors? I know you must have stacks of reading to do on a weekly basis, or at least a biweekly basis before the meetings. Are you getting adequate information from staff? yeah, there's a $64 question.
Yes, I feel we're getting adequate information from staff, and they did an excellent presentation the other day of what we're looking at and so forth. But again, if you take out the yardstick of thinking outside the box, are there other avenues we can think about that we haven't even talked about? I don't know. I don't think so. But that's always a challenge. There's always can be new information that we could say, oh, I wish I had had that before. So we have to make a decision and support it and go forward.
You have to make a decision with the information that you have at hand right now. So if anybody's holding back any information out there, give Rick a call or shoot him an email. It'll be one of the many. Can you just estimate how many emails you get on a daily, or weekly, or monthly basis? Lots?
No, that was interesting. When I joined council, I thought my phone would ring 10 times a day, and people would be knocking on my front door 3 times a week, and I'd get 50 emails in a week to respond to. But I think it depends on your base of people that support you, because the people that I hear from are friends and people I know personally, and other people that feel what I determine or perceive, people that feel comfortable with my personality and my outlook, and they will contact me. I don't tend to be a disruptor. I'm not loudly outspoken. And I don't confront people easily. So the people on the council that get most of the emails and phone calls, I would say, are those that are very vociferous in their positions and their approach to things. And I support some of them. I say, you know, I'm not that outgoing spokesperson. And I appreciate people like Valerie Loveless. Oh, she is just excellent with information, knowing the history. She's good with numbers. And she will speak her mind. And she's been a real asset. And I'm sad to see her decide to retire. But she mentioned last night that it's time for her to retire from the council.
In fact, I was kind of anticipating this might be her last time here on the radio. But yeah. And she might show up yet. Valerie, you're welcome here.
But she's, the way she can express herself is that I say, that's what I want to say. That's how I would want to say it. But I'm not a word composer, if you want to say, of how to put things together. A lot of times people say, Rick, what was your real question? So.
Well, you've communicated enough in order to be on the council longer than anybody else right now.
But do I get a lot of emails and phone calls? And no, and what I anticipate, or what I interpret that is my constituency is very satisfied with the positions that I take.
All right. We're going to continue here. This is the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio, and we'll be back right after this word. Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. Ladies and gentlemen, City Councilor Rick Riker is in studio today. Once again, Rick, we've been talking about the council and some of the things that they're facing right now and what it really takes to be a councilor in terms of time and commitment. How much time do you put in on a monthly basis or on a weekly basis? Can you accentuate that? Can you outline that for us? What does it really take?
Well, when you're having fun, do you keep track of time?
No, but my wife does.
Well, I go back to the day where we had a meeting every Monday morning, at least four times a month, and then the two Wednesday meetings. Those meetings can go from 2 hours to 5 hours, depending on the amount of material that we have to discuss, and sometimes later than that. I'm on 2 to 3 different committees. Those take 2 to 3 hours once a month, and there's many other committees you can attend just to be a listener, and there's also other events like Valerie's attended the Chamber of Commerce greeters meetings very often and so forth. So you can put 40 to 60 to 80 hours easy in a month, and I just really admire those people that are doing a full-time job, like DJ Fazer, working full-time and able to take the time off to be on council. And Brian D. LaGrange also, you know, he's working, takes time off to be on the council and attend to things. So you have to draw a line in the sand just how much you're going to be involved, but there's a great opportunity to put in as many hours as you want.
It certainly takes a commitment at some level to serve on the council. Well, of course, you get all those big butt checks every month, too, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. They're volunteers, folks. At any rate, with the council changing right now, and you've had a chance to meet with some of the new councilors coming in, do you expect a significant change in attitude or focus of the council or a change in direction?
Well, that's a big question.
It's my job.
The biggest change, I think, happens to all of us is when you come in for any new job and any new career. If you're not familiar with it, I think there's a learning curve involved. So the biggest change will be the challenge of how information is processed and what direction that they want to go. And I have not had a detailed discussion with any of them to know what direction they want to see the council go. Again, I encourage them to make sure that they have adequate information when they make a decision, and I think that's so important because nothing worse is just to have half the story. As Paul Harvey used to say, now for the rest of the story.
The rest of the story?
Yes. Right. If you only have half the story, are you making a good decision?
Right. What advice would you give to those counselors coming in right now to be prepared for what's going to happen?
I guess listen, have conversations, be open to different ideas, discuss the subject fully. But more important is express your feelings and express your viewpoints, because I think that's important, because when everybody expresses their viewpoint, then you can respond to them and actually have a conversation. And it doesn't have to be a debate. It can be a conversation where, oh, you have a good idea there. I like your viewpoint, you know, and see if there's some way to integrate it or incorporate it into the direction.
All right. Are there any ways that you'd like to see the council's protocol changed? Any changes in how things are done, in your opinion, as a senior counselor?
Yes. One thing I'm very upset with is the process for evaluating the city manager. The rating system, I think, is antiquated and inadequate. And I've explained this to the city manager that this next year I would like to take that on as a project to make sure that gets changed and include other counselors in that process as well. Right now, the rating system is 1 to 4, and it starts out with poor, fair, good, and excellent. And it really should be a 5 rating system between poor, fair, average. Between the average and excellent, there should be a very good in there. So the complication you get into when you're trying to rate the city manager, he may be doing a very good job, but you don't want to downgrade him to average, but you don't want to upgrade him to excellent because, you know, he may, in this one subject, he may not be a superhero. So I think that would be a real advantage. And the other thing is, when we come in as counselors, we're given those single word definitions or designations, but there's no definition. So if you're going to give him a poor rating, and it's over a 12-month period, the definition should be in there that a poor rating is not given to a single incident over the 12-month period.
It's got to be collective.
But it should be collective, and it should be a repetitive occurrence in a deficient that also can carry the connotation you would consider firing manager because of that. You have a...
All right. Interesting. We'll follow up on that when we continue. But first of all, we're going to continue on to news here, and we invite you to stay tuned, and we'll invite your questions and comments after the top of the hour news right here on KAJO Grants Pass, Oregon. The forecast for Grants Pass and the surrounding areas with an air stagnation advisory in effect until 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Areas of fog today with gradual clearing later in a high near 48. Areas of dense fog tonight with increasing clouds above that and low around 32. Wednesday, expect areas of fog, mostly cloudy with a high near 48. Thursday, patchy fog, partly sunny with a high near 56. And on Friday, partly sunny with a high near 58. Yesterday's high in Grants Pass, 42 degrees. The overnight low was 31. It's a no-burn day. Sunset this evening will be at 4:40. We'll reappear tomorrow morning at 7:26. Rogue River level this morning, reporting 1.87 feet and holding pretty steady there, flowing at a rate of 1,900 cubic feet a second with a nephelometric turbidity unit reading of 2 and a water temperature of accurately 42.9 degrees. Overcast skies, that fog is lifted just a bit here in South Grants Pass. It is 33 degrees here at the studios of KAJO, where this news and weather has been brought to you by our good friends at Cartwright's Market. And we're going to continue now with the Tuesday talk show here on KAJO Radio. And if you have a question or comment, our lines are open right now. The number is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. And you can pose your question right to our guest today. Grants Pass City Councilor Rick Riker has been thrown up here all alone to shoulder all of your questions and comments and critiques. And right away, we get a phone call coming in. So let's just start here and say, good morning. You're on the air. Do you have a question for us?
Good morning. Yeah, I think Councilor Riker has done a great job flying solo there. I'm calling because of the discussion they have been having about the homeless shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard any discussion really among the council about a concern that I have, and that is that because this is going to be, you know, apparently a fair amount of taxpayer money going into this facility, I think it's very important to the community, if they approve this, that people, transients that go to stay there, that they need to show a legal ID, and they need to be written down along with their contact information on a register, just like I have to do if I check into a motel. I have to give my license plate number. I have to show my driver's license. They write down all that information. Same thing if I check into a hospital or whatever. And so I think because this is taxpayer supported, my understanding is because it will be a so-called managed shelter, that legally they can ask that information. And for anyone that listens to KJO news or that reads the local newspaper police log, you will see that more than once a week you will see people that are arrested that have, that the newspaper will say, this person has been arrested 11 times in the last 12 months. I don't believe that a shelter should be a taxpayer-paid sanctuary or refuge for criminals. And some of these people are causing havoc in the community. There's been a lot of break-ins into businesses lately, more and more thefts all the time out of cars, in driveways, in front of the homes, whatever. It's gotten to be epidemic. And we need to start looking at ways to slow the crime down. And I think people that have a list of assaults, convictions for assaults, for burglaries, for thefts, for dealing meth or fentanyl or other dangerous drugs, those kinds of people with a long rap sheet, if it's been in the last 24 months or something, I don't think they should be admitted into a taxpayer-supported facility. I don't think they belong in there. I think they'll cause problems in there and in the community, and I don't think they should be welcome there or anywhere in town, actually. So that's kind of my feeling. I hadn't heard it discussed, and I think it should be.
All right.
So,
Rick,
I guess my question would be, does Councillor Riker think that there should also be some consideration and discussion of this issue?
All right, Rick, want to reply?
Hi, Ward. You have some very good points there, and we feel for you and would like to think we have the authority to do certain things. And the complex situation that we have is that I've been told that we're short 5 DAs in the county. So if somebody comes up with an issue, a violation, the DAs say we're shorthanded if it's a minor issue. And again, they have to define what's minor and major. They don't impose any sentence on them or even do anything. And those that do go to jail, the other fact that's happened there, which I've been told about, is that we have this relatively brand new jail, which we only had funding for staffing half of the jail. And then when COVID came along, they had two people to a jail. COVID came along, and they limited it to one person per jail in the jail. So you arrest somebody, and you think what the police officers have to go through. They arrest somebody, take them out to jail, and they basically slap their hands, said, we don't have room for you. Go back out on the street. So it's not so much a policy of whether an organization or the city council is doing. A lot of it's the funding and also the staffing. Today, people do not want to be police officers again. And if we go out, if there's an open position, instead of having maybe 200 people apply for it, you might have 20 people apply. And then you go through the background check. Some of these people we don't want to have employed in the city of Grants Pass because of the baggage that they bring with them. So you narrow it down and you put somebody through they get accepted. They put them through the police training program, and that can be up to 6 months out of town. They go through the program, they're halfway through that, and they say, this isn't for me, and they're out of there. And otherwise they come back and they're on the street and they see what's going on here and they say, gee, this isn't for me, we're out of here. So we're at a complement of over 50 police officers right now. Yes, we could use more, but even if we had more police officers, if they're not being incarcerated or they're not being prosecuted by the district attorney, how would you feel about, you know, about that procedure?
Well, I understand those issues, Rick, and I know that they're all valid and they need to be dealt with. And we should have and I know there's been talk about having a city public safety committee and a committee needs to study and deal with those issues, in my opinion, sooner rather than later. So I agree with, and I'm aware of those things that you're citing as problems, and they definitely are. But I don't think that removes the issue that I raised, that if this is a taxpayer-supported or funded facility, the number I heard was $750,000. That was the most recent number. Prior to that, it was $325,000 to operate for 1 year, you know, the current campsites. But then I heard $750,000 for being asked for this new shelter. And I guess all I'm saying is I don't think that taxpayers are going to be happy if people like this that keep committing these crimes go out in the day or late at night and commit crimes against them, and then they go and check in to sleep and eat or whatever at a taxpayer supported facility. I don't think that's right. I don't think they should be allowed in there if they have a long and fairly recent criminal record. I don't think they should be allowed. I don't think taxpayers should be expected to provide them with a place or provide them with support in that manner. So that's just my opinion, since it hadn't really been discussed, and since I understand that if it's a managed shelter like this is proposed to be, that it's legal to ask for ID. You know, I have to go out now. If I go out and buy a bottle of wine or a bottle of beer at a market, I have to show my state-issued driver's license. And it's not because they're questioning if I'm under 21. So the fact that I have to show, and some of the places actually even scan your driver's license just for that, just to buy a bottle of wine. And so I think it's ridiculous if we're allowing all these people into these places that we don't have any idea who they are, and we have no idea how to reach them or any contact information or what they look like. We have no information at all for potentially a couple hundred people, many of whom, or at least some of whom, are committing crimes regularly in the community. So, again, just something that I would like to see discussed as a policy, that they need to show an ID and provide contact information, and they are kept on a register, on a list.
So, Ward, I think you've raised a very good issue there. I'm not an attorney, so I can't say whether we can or can't do that. We would have the opportunity to ask that question to be part of the criteria. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, well, anyway, thank you. Thanks, Chuck. Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Ward.
Thank you very much, Ward. That brings up an interesting question. Has MIT laid out any ideas or any plans that they have for managing a shelter? Have they any rules?
They have a board, and I'm sure they have rules, but we haven't gotten into those details at this point.
They've not shared them with the council yet, but they want $750,000?
Well, I don't know how to answer that. Okay. They may have shared it to him. I have to be guilty. I always read every single email I get, so he may have shared that with us, and I have not read it. So that may be a better question for somebody else.
All right. Well, we've got more questions for you. Our guest is City Councilor Rick Reichert, and we'll continue right after this important message.
Go ahead and...
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in Progress. Ladies and gentlemen, we're down to our final segment here on KAJO Radio with City Councilor Rick Reicher, who has been kind enough to shoulder the load today. Rick, once again, we want to thank you very much. We've been talking about operational plans for the Mint has proposed. They have provided you with some of those or are going to?
They will be providing that Wednesday night. We've asked for that as part of our consideration at looking at their proposal further.
Okay, so that will be tomorrow night at the
Correct.
City Council meeting at 6 o'clock. The last copy of the agenda I had, which was still valid before this show started, we may have a new adjusted agenda for tomorrow night by this time, and we're expecting one here, but we've not gotten it yet, so we expect that to pop up on the agenda for tomorrow night's meeting.
Correct.
Okay. Other things on the agenda tomorrow night. Looks pretty much like a normal housekeeping tomorrow night. You've got a, community hearing on the Community Development Block Grant Program. That's an annual report. That's something we just have to provide to HUD, and doesn't appear that there's anything controversial in that. Rick, any comment?
No.
No. Quite frankly, that one puts me to sleep. I know it has to be done. You're looking at vacating a property line on Fruitdale Drive. That looks to be fairly straightforward. A pre-implementation compliance measure pathway required by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. That has to do with FEMA's floodplain situation, does it not?
Yes, they're always changing the rules, and lately they've given us a choice of three different methods, and we have to choose one of those three.
All right. Do we know which one we're going to choose, or which one do you favor?
I don't know which one we're going to choose.
All right. And then there's a comprehensive fee schedule proposal for annual cost of living adjustments. Cost of doing business for the government is going up, and if you're doing business with the city, it's going up too. Is that a fair assessment, Rick?
Yes. Prices are always changing.
Prices are always changing. All right. So that's tomorrow night. What do people need to know about what's happening with their city government right now? Lots of major things with the city, with the new council coming in. Of course, the homeless situation has been an ongoing thing for years now. We're about to the point where we're going to put a shovel on the ground for the water treatment plant. What do people really need to know when they attend that council meeting or they want to make comments?
Well, I guess if they have questions, bring those comments and questions to us, and we're happy to answer. I guess part of the frustration we saw over the past few years, and the mayor and Valerie were both loveless, were very expressed the frustration that we have as a council that we were under an injunction, but it was to our dismay that many times the audience would ask, you know, why aren't you doing this on the homeless? Why aren't you doing that on the homeless? Our hands were tied. And yet it was interesting how many times they would ask the same question, but it was like the public wasn't hearing. So we, the counselors, have been very attentive to them in responding, but we welcome their questions, but we also want to know that they're listening.
You need an informed constituency is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Is there a better way to do that? Because I know that all of the meetings are certainly streamed on the Internet. That's how we cover them. We report on them here. I know the Daily Courier reports on them. Is there another way to do that? Do the counselors need to reach out to the citizenry more? Is there a better way to make sure that the people understand what's going on with their city government?
I think we would all be welcome to different ideas, and you and me in the radio business, I'm sure when you reach out to your constituency, you want to know that people are listening and interacting with you. And if you have any ideas you can share with us, we'd welcome that.
Well, we've got three radio stations here, and they're all basically at your disposal. All we need to do is get the information, and we go after it a lot. But with our staff here, and I'll be quite frank with you here, our news staff consists of 1 3/4 full-time equivalencies, and we do one whale of a job in getting that out. So,
wow.
Compared to the Courier that has, what, 5 or 6 gathering news, we've got 1 3/4. I'm the 3/4, as a matter of fact.
That's amazing.
So we do an awful lot of work here in-house in order to get that information out.
But when you get the information out, are people listening, and therefore do you have the readership? Obviously, if you're doing the job right, then you're running a good business, and you can see the activity and the revenues.
It's all paid for so far.
Yes.
All paid for so far, but we could reach out more. Because once again, we don't just do this on the radio. It's on all three stations' websites, which requires input and time to put all that together. So it's a commitment that we made here for many years.
But you have a business model in how you approach it, and it's been successful.
So far, so good. But we're not reaching everybody. As much as we'd like to tell you that, we're not reaching everybody, and that's obvious. Of course, sometimes the news is not pleasant to listen to. I concerned with Ward when he called because we report that same situation with the police reports. We get those on a daily basis, and we see that people coming have been arrested 11 times in the last year for the same crime. So 2 weeks ago, we had the district attorney sitting right where you are. And he explained some of that here. Of course, you mentioned that the jail is about half full. Well, the jail is only funded to take up half. Part of that is already designated for certain beds. And there is a criteria on who gets released in terms of the seriousness of their crime. That was outlined by the district attorney here 2 weeks ago. They would like to do more. They're frustrated. But it all comes back to that budget, all the money coming in. So what's the city's outlook for money right now? Rick, there's a question for you. Can we project future revenues?
I think the city is in very good financial position. We have been in the black for many years. We watch how we spend and where we spend it. So,
aren't you required to be in the black?
Yes.
Yeah, you're required to be.
By state law.
By state law. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we could use more policemen.
Yes.
Just for the population that we serve, sure. The criteria is that we should have more officers on the street. We should have more boots on the ground. And in fire prevention and the fire department also needs additional people, and they're working on that. But at the same time, we're in the black, but there's not enough money to make it all right.
True.
Okay. So I just made a statement there, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Rick, what should people take away from today's program?
I think people should reach out to their city councilors and express their ideas, that they should be open to conversation where it goes, they hear our side as well as their side, and go from there.
All right. Rick Riker, want to thank you very much. Invite everybody to the city council meeting tomorrow night. Gets underway at 6 o'clock in city council chambers.
Correct.
And keep listening to the radio here for all of that information that we provide to you. You're listening to KAJO Grants Pass. Rick, thank you very much. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show.
Imagine a home filled with